I'm Matt Miller of the Ditch That Textbook podcast, a proud member of the Education Podcast Network, just like the show you're listening to right now. The opinions expressed are those of the individual hosts. Make sure you check out all the other great educational podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com.
Welcome to the Instant Relevance Podcast. The Instant Relevance Podcast is an educational podcast featuring the latest news and resources to make learning relevant for all students. Follow us on Twitter at InstantRel. Welcome to this episode of the Instant Relevance Podcast, and I am excited to be meeting today with Nancy Estepa, who I have come across on Twitter. We've interacted a few times, and all of a sudden just realizing her passion for math education, for mathematics, and for teaching, and I wanted to have a conversation with her about all the great things that she's doing. She is a math specialist in Virginia Beach, and has a couple of hashtags to her name, CRA Math, or ZY Math, Crazy Math, and Do Math Like a Girl, which stood out to me a lot too, because I have three daughters out of my four children, and we have powerful moments here to share with her tonight. So before I get started and pass this over to you, it's just you and me tonight. It looks like Raymond has situations that you and I have both come across in the past, which is one of our kids is just not giving up. So I wish you could be here with us tonight, but he adds a lot to this conversation, but I hope that you and I can share some great ideas. So Nancy, let me toss this over to you and ask you, as a math specialist and someone who cares about kids and their learning, what is it that you're passionate about that gets you up in the morning, excited for school, excited for going to meet with kids and teachers?
I always knew I wanted to be a teacher because of how much I loved to learn. And my only struggle when I was younger was mathematics. And so I do remember as I was younger and learning and kind of understanding myself and my strengths, I always felt like I was good in a lot of academic areas, but math was just not one of them, right? So I go to college, and there's some other things that I'm interested in too, like engineering or science, but I honestly was too intimidated by some of the higher level math classes that I was going to have to take. I knew that my foundation in mathematics was not solid enough, so I went after my other love, which is just learning. So I was like, I'll just teach elementary education. Hopefully I can handle elementary level mathematics, right? So I go and I get my teaching degree and I start teaching, and I love learning, but I realized very quickly that teaching math the way that I was taught math is not how I want to teach math, because I could see that my students were not passionate as I was delivering it the way that I remembered supposedly learning it. And then as I grew over time as an educator and working with my own math specialists and doing some of my own professional development, I learned that I really didn't learn that much math in school. I learned a lot of procedures and how to copy the teacher and get answers, but a lot of the reasoning and the connections and all of those things that I love to do as a learner, I wasn't doing that in math, and I should have been. So I'm super passionate about teaching, and I'm super passionate about being a math specialist in particular, because I think that there are a lot of students in our schools that don't see themselves as math people, that just need to see what is math for real, because we have a whole generation of teachers and many of us are doing the best that we can, like I was, but until you know better ways, you can't do better ways. You know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely. That's a lot of the work that I do, working with teachers and working with school districts on implementing new ideas, new structures, new ways to teach, just to train teachers that just because you learned it this way doesn't mean it's going to work any longer, is eye-opening to some. And to spend that time, just having a conversation with teachers the other day, it was fourth grade, and I had told them in a last meeting with them that I wanted to make sure that they pulled back on doing, like, on rushing through with multiplication. They were doing the lattice method, which is specific to everyday math program. And then they were doing the standard algorithm and all these things through. And I'm like, wait, hold off. It's not the right time yet. Give these kids a chance to simply develop and discover and play with the area model and then get into partial products with them. And I met with these teachers yesterday and they came at me with, you would not believe how much easier it was to get partial products across to these kids. The transition was so smooth. And I'm like, this is what I've been trying to tell you. And of these teachers, like, one of them is a second year teacher. One of them's a 10 year teacher. One of them's been doing it for 20. And they all had, like, the same educational background growing up that said, well, we just do it this way. And then we just follow our texts. And to open the door to them and say, not only is there a different way and a better way, but you can learn. The youngest one of those three teachers said, I feel like I've never understood teaching multiplication better than I understand it now. So I love that that's your position to work with teachers. Exactly. Yeah. It follows up.
I mean, I feel that. I don't want to interrupt you because I'm an interrupter and I'm working on it. And I don't care if you put that on the air because hashtag real life ADHD.
Go for it.
But I completely understand what you're talking about because I hear that same thing all the time. And I really love that look on students' faces when, you know, they get it and it works and they get excited. And so being a math coach, I also see those moments with teachers, exactly like you're saying, where they finally take that risk and they try something different and it works so much better than what they were doing. And they're so amazed and surprised at how quickly their students can catch on. And it's just about getting them to trust you enough and help them take that risk to do it a different way. Because I mean, so many of us were not taught math right. Like, they did us wrong. So we got to
mathematically traumatized is the phrase I hear around a lot out here. Like, it's the idea that we were just told, hey, if you get those right answers and you get them quickly, you're good at math. And that's honestly what I can ask my phone to do without even pushing a button now. So I guess my phone's an amazing mathematician, you know?
Yeah.
I had a really hard conversation.
Your calculator is amazing at answer getting, but a mathematician has to know what numbers to put in and what operation to put in. There's a lot of things that mathematicians, you know what I mean? That's what we have to get our kids ready for.
Right. I asked my phone the other day as an example to a teacher. I said, I'm like, just do 465 divided by 12. And it did it. And then I said, what was my average speed for a 12-hour drive if I went 465 miles? And it brought up a website of, you know, travel or something else like that. I can't remember what it was. It doesn't understand questioning. It just understands procedure. And that's what a lot of our students have been turned into, and why a lot of parents say, you know, like, what? I never liked math. I'm like, well, then you should be happy that we're teaching it differently right now. You should be excited that we're doing something different because you never liked it. And I had a hard conversation yesterday with somebody. Yeah.
Talk about some of the pushback you get. Yeah. So, like, the parents have a lot of pushback because honestly, most parents, I don't think I've ever met a parent that doesn't want the best for their kids. I have met parents that sometimes don't understand what is the best for their kids or how to give it to them. But I've never met a parent that doesn't care about their kids. And most of the time, the frustration is just misdirected because they want to support their students, but they don't understand the best ways to support them, to support their students. And the ways that we're teaching now, they look different. And so when you first glance at it, and you see this all the time on Facebook, people share all these Common Core horror stories. And as a math, if you know math, most of the stuff that people post are like, well, that makes perfect sense, but it doesn't make sense if you've never seen it before. And so we really have to work with parents and help them understand the same way that you would have our, right now we're like developing our teachers to help our teachers think and do differently with our students. But at some point we really need to get our parents in this conversation as well so that they can feel supported and more able to support our students. So usually I find that if you take it really slow with the parents and you teach them the same way you would teach the students, the same way that you would coach a teacher, then they end up understanding the why and then they buy in. And that's also a big reason for my YouTube channel, because sometimes I can talk to you or tell you all day, but that's not the same as watching it work with a student. So when I do my videos on my channel, I always make sure that it's students that are current, they're learning the concept. It's not someone practicing something that they already know. It's a kid learning in real time so that teachers, students, and parents can watch and see how does it look.
I really appreciate that part of it, because too often we will look up a video for some support and we'll find a perfect demonstration of something, just like the perfect problem that was written out in the textbook, and mom and dad see it a certain way or we see it a certain way, but we don't see the productive struggle along the way. And we want parents to know that that the math that their students are learning is intentionally developed to have our students struggle through certain conceptual development so that by the end point, they'll be able to do something effective and flexible with their math and not just reproduce answers. And those are difficult conversations to have. Do you ever host parent nights or parent get-togethers with in your school district?
I did. I've been in my current school district. This is only my second year in Virginia Beach, but when I was in Norfolk, I did. I hosted them, and I've been brainstorming one. I've been brainstorming for upcoming at my school, but I do need to make sure I flesh it out and it's very well thought out. But my current idea to get my parents involved in is I would like to develop like a series of events, because there's literally so much math in elementary school and I can't do like second grade math, third grade math, because a lot of like number sense and numeracy and computation estimation, a lot of them overlap. I work with fifth graders that are just now understanding regrouping, and then I work with first graders that can do it already. Do you know what I mean? So I want to set it up as a series of parent nights. That's do you remember that old show Mythbusters?
I love it. Yeah.
So I wanted to do like Mathbusters, where we bust all the math myths, but I wanted it to be like student centered. So I was thinking my first session could be like on the flexible fact strategies, so that parents understand why it's not important for students to memorize each individual fact in isolation, but they're not going to believe me until they do it themselves. Do you know what I mean?
I do. That's a really powerful opportunity for parents to see that. If you haven't already come across Tina Cardone on Twitter, she's a math teacher, and she wrote a book that's available open source on PDF now called Nix the Tricks. And she, while back, really... Do you? Excellent. Yeah. And went through all of the things that so many people think were the important ones. And, you know, even just the other day, I was talking to a teacher about when they were cross canceling in fractions. I'm like, there is no such thing as cross canceling. What you're talking about is the commutative property. You're simply talking about moving the numbers in the numerator and the denominator until they vertically make sense for you to write an equivalent fraction that's smaller. And I'm like, just that conversation was like, oh, well, that makes a lot more sense. My kids already know all those words. I don't have to introduce them to this new idea of cross canceling that's going to get in the way of cross multiplying. That's going to get in the way of not cross multiplying. And it's all of those things that also tie into the students that we have. I think you made it mentioned before that our students they weren't passionate about learning the way you were teaching them because they just weren't interested in learning it that way. And I had a Facebook conversation with a group of teachers just this morning who were saying, are your honors kids not as good as they used to be? My seventh grade honors kids, they just can't convert fractions to decimals very well. And they always used to be able to do that. And the comments that followed were just teacher after teacher saying, honors kids aren't the best anymore. They used to be able to do this other stuff. And it just doesn't stick until you do this, this, and this with all these tricks. And my response in that process was, listen, it's not sticking with these kids because they have absolutely no reason to care about converting fractions to decimals. Even when you say, maybe one day you might do this when you're cooking or when you're measuring something, like stop that stuff. Put them in a situation where they're already cooking and measuring so that eventually halfway through, they get so stuck that there's a requirement to learn how to convert a fraction to a decimal. Yes. And then all of a sudden you can teach them and it matters. And the honors student doesn't need to be somebody who can do arithmetic quickly, because that's the lowest entry job you can have, is someone who can count. What you need is the honors student who thinks flexibly and creatively and dwells on ideas. And as a specialist in your position at the elementary level, you see such creative problem solving across grade levels and sometimes such struggle. I wonder, what are some of the strategies that you use when you get some pushback from teachers on what kids are supposed to be able to do?
Oh my gosh, I have so many strategies. Well, first, let me just back up real quick for the Nix the Tricks book, because remember in the beginning when I said I realized as an adult that I didn't really have a math education? So, yeah. You know, the table of contents in Nix the Tricks, when I read down that table of contents, that's what math looked like for me in school. So when I read that book, and it's totally free and everybody should download it right now, and I realized why I hated math so much. You also said your honors kids, they're not doing it as well as they used to because it doesn't make sense. And math is about making sense. If they're not able to make sense, they're not doing mathematics, like you said. So we have to give them a reason and a purpose for doing the problem solving and the mathematics, and it has to make sense. And if it doesn't make sense to them, then it's our job as the educators to help it make sense. So as when it comes to strategies for helping things make sense, I have a couple of go-tos. One kind of piggybacks on what you were talking about is using real life situations or tasks or problems that help them see how, A, this math is useful in my life, and not just when I'm a grown up, but like right now, because you can always either find or create a problem that shows how they can use the math that they're learning in school right now. So that's like my number one thing. I always try to provide a context for the learning so that it's meaningful. And then my second go-to probably is using the CRA process, which is where you start with building something. So you take those manipulatives and what grade levels do you usually work with?
I work with K-12 actually.
Okay, so like, you know, like some, I feel like they're not used as much as in the upper grades. Some teachers do and some teachers don't. But in elementary, because I'm K-5, we're very like always manipulative heavy in the beginning. So we always build whatever the math is with manipulatives, and then we can draw representations of it. And so that's like the R part of CRA. So concrete is the C, and that's building. And then the R is the representation, which is like drawing a picture. And then the A is the abstract, which is just using the numbers. Mm-hmm. And so when I was in school, all we ever did was the A part. And when you were talking about your teachers just using that lattice method or the traditional algorithm, like you have them working in an abstract stage, but do they even understand the mathematics at that stage? Usually they don't. Usually if they're using lattice or traditional, in my experience, they are not considering place value at all. And they're just thinking of them as single digits and ones and not understanding the numbers at all. And so if you use the CRA process when you're teaching students and you spend time to connect what we built to what we drew and what we drew to these numbers here, then students have a chance to interact with the mathematics and see it visually, so that by the time that they're just using numbers and symbolic representation, it makes sense to them.
Oh, so, absolutely.
Yeah.
And it's funny when you said CRA, because most of my conversations would go with the CPA, the concrete pictorial.
Same thing.
And that's what's crazy about it is there are still teachers who have been teaching and going through professional development and learning and trying their best to go through all of the shifts that came through when their NCTM standards or their state standards shifted to Common Core standards, that didn't understand the value of that pathway, that concrete, and then drawing your concrete as a picture so that you don't have to have the concrete anymore.
Right.
And then drawing your picture as a number so that you don't have to keep drawing pictures all the time. But
yeah.
why it's valuable, and why, when you truly do have a student who can demonstrate both accuracy and understanding at an early stage, it's difficult to force that student to step back in that pathway and say, you know, I still want you to play with the models right now. And
right.
So you have a very different group of kids to work with, which is also why I really like working in the math workshop model, because I can break my students into ability level groups that can engage them at their level and continue them along their own pathway. But it also gives me time to make sure every student gets a chance to demonstrate their understanding on a lot of different levels.
Exactly.
And so, yeah, especially with elementary, to give kids a chance to share their voice as they interact with mathematics is a powerful shift in teaching, because like I've mentioned on this podcast lots of times, and I know we all know this, all of the mathematics information and the best lecture that I ever gave to anybody is out on YouTube 1,000 times. So I don't need to be the person who deposits that information anymore. I need to listen. Yes. I need to add wait time to my lesson plan, not before or not after I ask questions, but before I ask questions. I need to walk over to a group of kids and just listen to them, wait, and then hear if I need to ask anything or guide a path or guide a direction. And so I'm really excited about the work that you're doing with kids and with teachers in Virginia Beach right now. But I want to learn a little bit more about the Do Math Like a Girl focus that you have as well.
Okay. So research shows that girls are underrepresented in STEM fields, right? And so I also read, I believe it was Joe Bowler's research, that one of the reasons why we're suspecting that girls are underrepresented in STEM fields is because of lack of confidence in the area of mathematics. And I know that that was definitely 100% my story. And so I started a STEMinist club at my school, and it was an application process, and I pumped it up, and my club right now is all girls. Obviously, I could probably approve some boys, but it was mostly about empowering girls and knowing that girls can do math too. And so half of the club is kind of spent building advocacy and teaching the girls how to advocate for themselves in the math classroom. And the other half is working on things in math that they want to get better at. So like one of our very first meetings, we talked about, we read a book about feminism, and there's this whole series of a book about, so it's like a book about racism, a book about feminism, a book, it's all these great books. We got to find the link so you can like mention it somehow. But I bought the book about feminism, and we talked about what a feminist is. And on the very first page, it says, well, one of the pages, it says, some people think girls can't do. And it lists all these things that people think girls can't do. And the very first thing on the list is girls can't do math. And so we had that whole conversation with my girls about, why do you think that is, that people think girls can't do math? And do you guys believe that? And we had this really rich conversation, and the girls were saying, you know, I feel like the boys, they're better at math because, you know, they're just loud and they're impulsive, and which is true of a lot of boys, honestly. You know what I mean? But I said,
I do.
Well, because I mean, yeah. But I said, well, do you think that that's helping them be better mathematicians? And they just kind of looked at me, and I said, so as soon as they have a question, they ask it, right? They might forget to raise their hand, and yes, they might call out. I've seen the boys in y'all's classes, and I've seen it. I understand. But don't they ask that question right away? Do you guys do that? Do you guys ask questions as soon as you have questions? Well, no, a bunch of the girls didn't ask questions. Well, why don't we ask questions in math class? Oh, well, we either A, care, don't want people to think that we're dumb if we have a question, or B, we don't want to bother the teacher right now because, do you know what I mean? And these are the same ideas that went through my head when I was little. I remember thinking, I don't want to ask my teacher because I don't want her to think I'm not trying, or I don't want her to have to repeat it and then think I wasn't listening, or I didn't want to bother anyone. And I also had this like self-doubt, like if I ask questions, like there must be something wrong with me. So like the first thing that I said to my girls is, hey, we don't have to call out in class, but can we raise our hand? And can we do that before we get lost and frustrated? Because I guarantee you, if you're brave enough to ask a question, there's other kids in your class that have that same question. And you know, the other thing that mathematicians do, it's not just answering questions all day, because that's another common misconception. They all think mathematicians just answer questions. Mathematicians ask questions. They ask great questions. And so I tell the girls all the time, I had club today, and a girl, I could see her eyes welling up because she had fallen behind in a little bit of the activity we were doing, and I didn't realize it. And I said, well, look, when did you get lost? And she showed me where she got lost. I was like, well, wasn't that like two steps ago? And she's like, yeah. I was like, well, why didn't you raise your hand? Why didn't you say, hold up, I'm stuck? Why didn't you ask your friend? And she just looked. I was like, did you forget? And she says, yeah, I forgot. And I said, remember, you're powerful. You ask that question. You ask for help and don't wait too long and you won't feel frustrated. You know what I mean? And she, yeah. I was like, you can do this. Everything that we're doing right here, you can do. You're just frustrated right now because you're two steps behind and you forgot to advocate for yourself. And so we're doing that in the club. And so the girls are coming around, and when I go into their classrooms and I co-teach lessons with their teachers, they are putting their hands up. They're taking risks. They're saying, I want to try, even if I'm not sure it's going to be right. I have a question. And I think that it's just as much about changing culture for girls, because girls feel like we have some cultural stereotypes going on. Do you know what I mean? They feel like they want to stay safe. They want to be polite. They want to be respectful. And boys, and I have a boy and a girl, so I'm not saying I raise my kids perfectly or with no stereotypes, because it just happens. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you know, so like, girls, I want you to speak up. Boys, yeah, Kai, sometimes I want you to wait until the teacher calls on you before you shout that out. Do you know what I mean? But just because those stereotypes are there, we have to teach our girls how to overcome the stereotypes, just like we would want to teach boys to overcome stereotypes too. So that's what it's all about.
That's a big message to be a part of this, is that it's not just, hey, we're going to overcome something that's been a longstanding and unfortunate stereotype, but it's, we have to learn how, and we have to stay vigilant on making those actions and teaching kids, teaching girls. I have three out of my four kids are girls, and teaching them how to advocate for themselves in a very equal way. And it's powerful that you are not only doing that just in your work and in your writing and in your thinking and in your research, but you're setting up opportunities for kids. The STEMinist is an amazing word. I love it. And, giving them opportunities to reflect back on that and say, hey, you know what? I guess I didn't do that for myself and I should have remembered. And to grow from that and to learn. It cycles back to two things. One was that we don't want math to be about quick, blurted answers. We want it to be about thoughtful mathematical right. thinking. And maybe what we're selling, we need to yeah. tell kids, the girls at the same time is, you know what, maybe you're not yelling things out at the moment because you are being a mathematician quietly. You are being a yes. thoughtful mathematician, and you're actually considering, and you don't have to be yelling it first to be a mathematician. You just need to be yes. thinking about the mathematical problem at hand. And that's a powerful tool to say, you know what, silence is not necessarily a lack of ability here. And it just yes. may demonstrate that you are being a better mathematician and an eager learner, and it goes back to what you started with, is that your willingness to learn, you know.
Yep. And we talk about that with the boys too, like even if I'm in their classroom, because I go to a lot of the classrooms in the school, if I do have kids calling out, I do say, hey guys, remember, we're going to show respect right now. This is independent think time, because mathematicians are thinkers and they take their time to think, and then we're going to share our thoughts. And so I have to check my boys sometimes, and some girls, you know what I mean? But I think that when you let girls know that think time, you want to take that think time. And then when you share your thoughts, you don't have to have an answer to share your thoughts. And I tell kids all the time, I don't really care about your answer. I care about your thinking and your reasoning. Because if you have thinking and reasoning, then you can always get the answer. Let me hear your thinking and your reasoning. And I really find that girls are deep, very deep thinkers. Like you said, a lot of girls are, and a lot of students that get labeled as low students, they're also very deep thinkers too. And I see that a lot.
Well, so I do too, across the board, across grade levels. And I think the more we focus on what you are doing and what teachers like you are doing, which is concentrating on the value of thoughtful problem solving over high speed fact practice, and the value of taking individuals for who they are and helping them stand out as the mathematicians that they are and can be, the more likely we are to change the narrative on individual and large scales quickly. So I really appreciate the conversation that you've had with me tonight, and all the sharing that you've given us, from your background to your involvement to, wow, some of the creative, cool things that you're doing. So I'm sure some of our listeners are going to want to get in touch with you. So where can they find you in social media, your YouTube channel, a couple other places that they can connect with you?
Oh, sure. So I'm not super famous or anything, but you can definitely search me on Twitter. It's Nancy, N-A-N-C-Y, and then underscore Estepa, E-S-T-E-P-A. That's my Twitter handle. You can probably also search, if you search on Twitter, hashtag crazy math, you'll see my name pop up a lot. And then if you want to kind of see my channel and what kind of videos I have going on my channel, you can just pop up YouTube and search hashtag crazy math. You'll see my name. It'll be Nancy Estepa, hashtag crazy math. I'm right up there. And then if you click to look through my videos, you can look through and see if there's anything that can be helpful for you. And I also take requests for videos. So if you want to see like how something is taught, I have permission for quite a few students at my school, and they love to do videos with me. So if you want a video, or you want to holler or shout out an idea, tag me on Twitter. I love sharing ideas on Twitter.
That's fantastic. I hope you get 100 requests and have a great time making those videos. So thanks again for your time. I'm looking forward to staying connected with you and seeing all the great things that you do out there. And keep in touch and keep sharing those great ideas with everybody.
Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed the talk, and I am looking forward to continued collaboration. I'll be following you.
All righty, take care.